The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Now, we were all saddened by the death earlier this summer of much-loved comedian and performer Brendan Grace. And until his untimely death, Brendan had been working to put on a variety show in the Olympia Theatre to support Engaging Dementia, who provide training and resources for those who care for people with dementia. The concert is on tomorrow night, and one of the groups involved is the Forget-Me-Nots Choir. Nora Owen, former politician, is a member of the choir, and she joins in. How are you doing, Nora?
I'm doing great, and I mean, it's when I hear Brendan's name, I just get a little bout of sadness coming over me, because he got involved with the Forget-Me-Nots Choir. He was in America, sent me an email, said, look, I'd like to do something for dementia. He said, I'd like to come along to your choir. So he came out several times over the last 2 years, sang with us, and then we heard about this concert, so we're singing in the concert tomorrow night. And along with, it's called Thanks for the Memory, so it has lots of people that people will love to hear again. Red Hurley and Dickie Dock, as we call Dickie Rock, and Paddy Cole, and Ron Stockton's Wing, and Donal Lunny, and then there's some more.
Lisa Lam is in there, beautiful voice.
And Foster and Allen, and Mike Denver, and Sharon Shannon.
So stellar lineup.
And we've been, some of these celebrities have been coming out to the choir, and we've been practicing with them. So it's amazing, because a lot of the people in the choir are over 70, I'm over 70, but a lot of them are over 80, and some of them even over 90.
Okay.
And they're all coming in tomorrow night to sing.
So Brendan contacted you.
Yes, I had interviewed Brendan when I did a little bit of work on TV3. I was doing the midweek programme, and I interviewed him, and then out of the blue I got an email saying, I'd like to do something for dementia, Alzheimer's. He said, I believe you've been talking about it, and you're in the choir with your husband Brian. So when he came to Dublin the next time, we met up, and he came out to Baldoyle, where the Forget-Me-Not sings every Tuesday morning, and we had great crack with him. He was just wonderful, and he also then got us involved. He had recorded The Dutchman, and Donal Lunny came out, and we sang the chorus, and they stitched together. I don't know how these things technically happen, but they stitched together Brendan singing it when he was in his 30s and our choir singing the chorus.
Yeah.
And we recorded it, and it was sold very extensively over Christmas last year for Engaging Dementia in the hospitals and in some of the shops.
And of course.
And so he stayed involved, and then this idea of this legacy concert emerged. It's now being produced by Brian Redden of Derek Films. And Brendan was going to do the emceeing, but sadly he passed away in July. Mm. And so, but he left instructions that he wanted the Forget-Me-Nots Choir to sing at it. So we are going to sing at it. And in the meantime, it was quite a small venture, I think, to start with, but after Brendan's death, it began to really grow, and Brian Redden has put together a really stellar cast, as I say.
Tomorrow night in the Olympia Theatre. And of course, your connection with dementia is a very personal one. You mentioned your husband Brian already. And
yes, that's why we joined the choir. I found this choir, Forget-Me-Nots, which was started by three sisters whose mother had dementia, Orla Horn and her two sisters, Karen and Fiona. And they started it. They were already in a choir, what I call a kind of a real choir that was doing competitions and everything. They started the Forget-Me-Nots. Started, I think, with about five or six people in the room. Now we're bulging out the community centre, and they keep saying to me, Nora, don't mention it again. More people want to get into it. But we have, I mean, there's probably 150 at least members in it now, but not everybody comes every week. They can't manage
and
it.
And not everybody has dementia.
And not at all. But there are people with other kinds of difficulties, frailty, wheelchairs, walking frames and that. And anybody with dementia, Alzheimer's, very welcome. They must have somebody with them. They can't be, it's not a place just to drop somebody.
Yes, yes.
They're there. But what's good about it is, Nora Walsh, our musical director, we sing the old songs. Because when I went with Brian, I thought, oh gosh, he find it hard to learn new songs. But they were all the songs he knew. And the minute we'd start them, he didn't have to read the words. And I see that now with some of the people around me with dementia.
We've heard this, and even Glenn Campbell, that documentary documentary.
That's
I don't know if you ever saw it.
I did.
That there is something about the brain and singing.
Yes.
And that dementia doesn't seem to have an effect on
it. I mean, some of the older memories stay.
Yes.
It's the more current stuff and capability. I often say my little grandson, Alfie, who's 5 now, and Miller, who's 3, like they're learning every day, whereas Brian was unlearning every day. So tying the shoelaces, pulling up the socks, all the things that little children learn. Somebody with dementia is losing that capacity day by day,
and
it's heartbreaking.
Sad, yeah.
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
So you're losing this person that you lived with and loved.
And sort of you go to say something, and then you realise you're not quite getting it. I mean, the early days in 2007 when we had the first diagnosis or the first inkling, we had an MRI done and it showed up 5 what they call TIAs. Don't ask me to say they're transischemia something or other, and they're like little strokes.
Mini strokes.
And depending on how strong they are, they which brain cells they kill. And so if it's the speech or the sound or the hearing, they go. And so you know that what's ahead of you is more cognitive loss and more impairment. But it took me 3 years after that to actually bite the bullet and go to the geriatrician and get the diagnosis, because there's a stigma
attached
to it.
I've spoken to you before,
And you were
in denial. Was it to protect yourself?
It was
to protect myself.
Brian? I was to protect Brian more, because I didn't want people. He looked exactly the same every year, and he still nearly looks the same now. He's got a bit older now because he's 86. But I didn't want people kind of pointing or looking and saying, God, do you see any difference and all the rest? And so sometimes if he wasn't quite catching what they were saying, I'd say it a little louder, he's a little bit deaf. You used little euphemisms like that to kind of cover, not your embarrassment, but just people didn't talk about it. And I decided when I went public that really we needed to talk about it. And your programme and other programmes now, every few weeks now, you're getting somebody on who's willing to talk about it. Because I remember reading, I went to the Citizens Assembly, did a thing about ageing. And one of the doctors there, I remember the end of his speech, and I looked it out in the last few days, and he said, there's a discrepancy in the healthcare system between the care for acute illnesses, things like cancer, and those with slow, debilitating illness like dementia. We have lots of money into certain illnesses.
We front load things like cancer.
But dementia and that is still the poor relation. And we have to recognise it's coming down the road.
Exactly. We've been told that we're going to live longer because of medical advances.
Yes, yeah.
So more of us are going to have dementia.
The Alzheimer's Society is brilliant at engaging dementia. But the Alzheimer's Society, you know, is still, they're providing great services, but there are loads of towns and villages where there's no service at all for somebody. Now, we've just started in Malahide, we started a little society, and we have now opened a centre for people to attend one day a week. And Lee and the carers don't have to stay with them because it's professionally being run professionally by people who know what they're doing.
So it's a respite.
So it's a respite from 12 to 5 on a Monday. But they have to be diagnosed, have to be assessed by the person running it. Maeve has to assess them. We don't have any say, obviously, in who gets
in. But as you say, it's a geographical lottery.
It's a geographical lottery. And sometimes it's geographical based on if the community has the capacity to fundraise. Like Malahide would have the capacity to fundraise. So we have to, I'm on the fundraising committee, we have to raise about 20,000 here to fund that centre. And we've had some very generous donations already. Gibney's gave us a very large pub out there, gave us a very large donation. But these are the kind of things that stop people putting in a centre like this. And so, I mean, when the budget comes up now, I always use the opportunity to talk to former colleagues and remind them not to forget, because, you know, there's lots of needs, but this dementia is really growing and people don't realise there's about 400 different types of dementia. And even in the choir now, and the people coming in to sing tomorrow, nobody in the audience will know who's standing on the stage who has it. But there are differences. I can see differences. Some of them like to clap and make noise during the singing, and we just let them get on with it. And others are quiet and they just do the singing.
It's a difficult question. It seems to me, in talking to people like yourself, and we had Kathy and Kevin in recently, and both of them are suffering with two different types of dementia, that when it gets to its worst stage, that it's probably more difficult for the carers, the people that are left behind.
Yes, well, I mean, I often think that the person with the dementia, that they're not as aware of, their cognitive thing has been disappearing. So as long as, you know, there's somebody caring for them and feeding them and washing them and getting them, you know, ready to go out if you're going out, the carer's life changes. You know, my life has changed with the caring of Brian. But I always say, because people will ring in and say this, I said, we both have pensions, so we have the capacity to get some outside help right. in. And so in the last 3 or 4 years, I was getting people in from a very good group called Be Independent. And they were coming. If I had a meeting, I would ring them and say, I need you for 3 hours on a Tuesday afternoon or Monday morning, whatever it is. And they would come in. And Brian got to know them. And we've good pensions and we could afford that. But there's lots of people who can't. And that's why the need for the government of the day to recognise that this is a silent, sad, lonely kind of existence for a lot of carers. And remember, they're all older. Like, 9 out of 10 people over 65 do not get dementia, but 1 out of 10 does. Yeah. And so, and then there's a lot more people getting earlier dementia before the age of 60. And that's so sad because these are people who are still in the prime of their life, as it were, and they have to give up their jobs.
Did Brian know what was coming down the tracks? Did you have...
No, I don't think he did. I mean, there were times when I'd say, Brian, you forgot that. Ah, no, sure, you forgot this yesterday or something. Early on, he was able to say to me, I forgot things as well. So if, in his mind, it was just being a bit forgetful.
So was the word dementia ever used in front of
him? No, not really. Now, our doctor did kind of quietly say, look, get the MRI done. And when we had it done, he said, you know, you really need to think in terms of what this might be leading to. But people don't use it. I mean, they do use it now to me, people who are, but I've met people who I knew, both the husband and wife in a couple or a partner, and I didn't know. They never exchanged that their husband or wife had dementia until I went public and they began to tell me.
And you've never had a heart-to-heart with Brian?
No, not really, about it. No.
Why?
We didn't. Like the doctor, when we go to his geriatrician, the geriatrician would talk to him and say, well, Brian, you went to the pictures yesterday, didn't you? And he'd say, yes or no, usually the opposite to what was the truth, yes, you know, because he didn't. But his short-term memory was so bad. And we didn't talk about it when he was still quite alert. And I'm sorry I didn't now, you know, because there were things I should really have raised with him. Although we started immediately, did things like the enduring power of attorney, which is, you know, the message I try to give out to people. Even anybody over 60 should be doing them anyway, whether they have dementia or not, because it sets down what you want done if something happens to you. So we did that and did things like changing our bank accounts into both our names and our electricity and gas bills, which should always be in both names of the people in the house, because an awful lot of women in Ireland years back didn't put their names, and now they're finding it difficult. They've no, when they're asked for proof of address, they've no address to give them because it's still the man's password. So that sort of thing. So we didn't really, Brian and I didn't really talk about the progression. It might be my fault, it might be my fear, it might have been, I thought, I don't want to upset him, because he was still able to do quite a bit up to about 5 years ago. Then reading began to go and concentration on the telly. He painted a lot. He used to do very nice paintings, but, you know, he'd sat down to do it, but, you know, an hour later there wouldn't be much done. Concentration goes and language goes. The words disappear. You can't get the words out. That was the bit I noticed most. He'd start to say something and I'd say, what are you trying? And I tried to give him another way of saying it, and then he'd get frustrated a bit and I'd say it and then he'd get it back again. He doesn't have much speech now. And he has certain visual things. He'd point out to the garden in the nursery. He's in a nursing home now, point out, and there'd be nothing there, but a bird might have flown by and he might think they're people or a tree or something, you know. So it's sad to watch. At the same time, he's happy. I mean, he's relaxed, and that keeps me happy.
Because you were on the telly with us this time last year, actually.
Yes, yeah.
This time last year. And you didn't say it on air, but we had a long chat, and you were saying that Brian going into a nursing home was imminent. And
well, I felt it was, because last year in June, we were going, our choir was going up to sing in Bloom. They were doing the Reminiscence Garden in Bloom, and they asked the choir up to sing, and I was in the bus with Brian. We were going up there and I had a bad fall. I sat on that drop down seat at the front and it popped up and I didn't realise, and I went backwards down, cracked my back, and ended up in Connolly Hospital that day. And it, I suppose it was a wake-up call, because I didn't luckily break a hip. Ray, it's the first time I ever was glad I was well padded. I made a kind of joke out of it. If I'd been skinny, I would have definitely broken my hip. But thank God I'm well padded. And so you can sometimes, being a little bit better padded is a help. You'd be so slim, you'd break your hip, you know. And so I, when I came home, I had to move downstairs. I couldn't climb stairs. And we had to get somebody in to sleep in the house with us for 4 or 5 nights until I was able to move, because one of the other things with people with dementia, they get up a lot during the night, and you know, 5, 6, 7 times sometimes, and so you'd always
to go to
be on there.
Just for
and just they wouldn't really know why they got up, and usually would be the bathroom. And so I began to really have to think, and I spoke to my two sons and my son who was living abroad at that stage. And, you know, I said, we think we might be coming towards a stage. And they were very willing to recognise that too, which is a great help. They weren't saying, oh, no, Mum, we have to keep him at home or anything. They recognised that it was becoming harder. And I knew that if I had any health problems, which touch wood I didn't, except for this fall, there would be a problem. So we began to look around then at that stage. He got a bit of respite in Highfield, and then we found a lovely small nursing home out in St. Margaret's called New Park, and they're absolutely wonderful. Yeah. And I can't praise the caring staff enough. We sometimes forget that attached to these nursing homes there's the nurses and the doctors, the professional people, the pharmacists or whatever, but there's also a huge cadre of wonderful carers, you know, who are FITAC 5, FITAC 6 trained. And I often think we don't really pay enough respect
to
for
them,
that
yeah.
kind of, because
yeah.
if they weren't there, these nursing homes would not be able to operate. Mm. And, you know, we really have to recognise that this is a very respectable, good career to have as a carer, and give that kind of comfort to people like me.
And how was the transition from home to the nursing home?
Oh, well, Brian didn't notice it really. We my son and myself took him up. We took him up at lunchtime on purpose so that somebody would take him off for his lunch. We left. I don't want to get upset, but we left. We hung up all his clothes and put them in a drawer and then did the usual. And then we left. I didn't say goodbye to him that day because I thought he doesn't really know. And he was sitting having his lunch, and they came back and said, oh, he's enjoying his lunch. And he was always a good man for his food. And then we waited for about 24, 48 hours before we went out to see him. And you know, I think he settled in. Now, you want to think that, you want to feel that. He certainly didn't try to follow us out or say, I want to go home or anything like that. And I haven't taken him back home. That's everybody's choice. Some people maybe think it's a good idea. We've taken him out, but not back to Malahide to his home, because I thought that would confuse him a lot.
And he's about a year now.
And he's a year. Just if you'd asked me yesterday, I would have said a few months, but it's actually a year. So the first few months are just heartbreaking. You're caught with, did I make the right decision? Is it the right thing to do? Now, obviously, his doctor and all supported what we were doing, but you feel, look, you can't help but feel you're kind of letting them go because you can't keep them at home any longer. And it's funny, my mother was a widow most of her life. My father died when I was 4, and my mother had 6 children under 10, and she was very independent. And when she got Parkinson's, and without us knowing, she just took herself out and got herself a bed in Our Lady's Manor, where she had been. She used to visit Michael Collins' sister out there for a long time, and she knew it, and they had mass and they did all the things she wanted, and she didn't say anything to us. You know, she didn't want to come and live with one of us, and she went out. And I probably learned from that there's a moment at which you make this kind of decision. You have to let go, and you make a decision. And, you know, I had sons, I didn't have daughters. I was conscious of wonderful daughters-in-law, but it wasn't my job to hand them my husband to be minded, you know,
yeah.
And I mean, they would mind him in our house, but it's a very big decision and it's a financially very heavy decision, yes, on people. And, you know, each month as it goes by, it gets a little bit easier. But there are times when I want to do something or something's about to happen and I go to nearly tell Brian about it and he's not there, you know.
And when you go in, does he recognise
you?
Oh,
he does. He does, yeah. He's a great walker. I mean, one of the things that dementia brings on is something called pacing, and a lot of people with dementia pace, walk round and round and round, you know, and that's why a lot of them do. People do get lost because they go out and then they just keep walking.
Okay,
and
there's an urge to walk.
Walk and just keep going, whether it's to find somewhere. I mean, one taxi man told me that they found his father. He's trying to get back to his old house where he'd grown up, and eventually they found him.
Yeah.
And it's very, very frightening for somebody to get lost. Very frightening for the carers and the people looking for them, because you just don't know what will have happened, and we've heard of tragedies.
Yeah, well, it happened to a man in Spain recently, didn't it?
That's right, yes. And I knew he was in a big shopping centre, and his wife obviously turned to look at something and then he's gone.
Yeah.
And it happened to me one day in the pavilions in Swords. I had the grandchildren and suddenly I was minding them and suddenly I didn't see Brian. So Milo, who's now 10, but he was only about 8 or maybe even 7, he did a dash around and found him, brought him back by the hand, you know. And Brian was luckily just at the door of the shop. He hadn't gone out, but if he'd gone out into the main part of it, you know, it's a kind of a worry, and people, I'm sure, have to face that. So you do keep a hold of people.
Is it because people describe, you know, grieving,
yes,
even when the person is still alive?
Ah, yes.
When it comes to dementia, is Brian a different person?
Well, yeah, because he's not communicating anything,
right,
to us, you know, other than enjoying a cup of tea, and he loves his biscuits and he'll enjoy that. But there's no verbal communication really. And, you know, like I go in and I tell him things, but I don't know how much of it he's taken in. You know, we've brought in, you know, one of the things you do, you have a photo album in the room and you go through them. And some of them, he kind of will point to and will remember that, yeah, that's so-and-so. And, well, he mightn't know the name, but he'd say, oh, yeah, or something when I say, now, that's Paddy that you knew in Yall. He was from Yall. And, you know, he might sort of cop that, but the current ones. And then there's other moments, like Brian hasn't driven for several years, because I just felt once he had the dementia, I really didn't want to have him getting lost or causing an accident. And I do worry sometimes people aren't thinking that they should stop the driving, but that's up to them. But we've taken him out now during the summer on the fine days, and there's a lovely place near the donkey shed on the road to Ashburn and we take him out. But the minute he gets into the car and has the seatbelt on, he turns and he says, clear left. Because that was his job, to tell me there was nothing coming from the left. And
I
he does it. And I nearly cried when I heard it the first time. And it was absolutely the clearest words I'd heard. Clear left. And then I said, thank you. And we carried on.
It's nearly like a reflex now.
It was a reflex, absolutely reflex. And but he knew why he was looking, to make sure there was no car coming. And he said, clear left. And it's just one of those things that kind of gives you a little start for a minute. And you just hope that he is. I mean, they'll tell me there if there's anything wrong.
Anne-Marie O'Farrell says, thanks for giving... much appreciated letting Nora talk about dementia on air. Nora is right. You're on your own with not much help. It's like prison without inmates. It kills care and the person they look after. And how are you getting on at home alone? Somebody wants to know. Yeah. That's Anna.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. In fact, my son is back living with me.
Is he? Right, okay, so you're completely fine.
And so it's not too bad. I mean, one of the other things, I mean, Anne-Marie, you don't have to be alone. People will offer help. But here's the thing. At a certain stage, somebody's saying, I'll come in and you go out. Sometimes the preparation for that
can put you off a bit, and
that's why I was using the professional carers, because they would come in and literally I would say, I'm off. And they knew what to do. I mean, I had done things like, you know, the things they advise you on the website. You know, I'd marked the presses in the kitchen saying plates and cups and biscuits and cake, and I had put another banisters in the up the stairs, and you know, I had done things like that to help with preparations. But
And can you, Nora, as a former politician, you know, impress upon your colleagues? Like we had Brendan Courtney in last week, and I don't know, we have to talk about Dad. So he was pressing for expanding the Fair Deal scheme into nursing homes.
Yes, they're talking about that, but everything seems to take so long to do. And I also think there's probably a gap in the HSE and the Department of Health that there's a home care, you can get home care an hour a day or something, and even without a medical card you're eligible for that. But I do worry that I don't know how much training on the people are very good, they come in and they make breakfast or get somebody up and dressed or bandage, but I don't know how much emphasis are being put on people who can cope with dementia, because people can get quite aggressive. They won't want to do what you ask them to do. If you say, you know, put your clothes on, we're going to put your, they might resist it. Brian was fairly gentle, but once or twice I had to put him into bed in his clothes because he just wouldn't take his clothes off, and the shoes and everything. So you waited till he fell asleep and then took the shoes off, left him in the trousers and shirt, and the next morning changed them, you know. And you just make little allowances like that.
Yeah. Tomorrow night, the Olympic Theatre, it doesn't say if there's tickets.
Well, I think there might be a very few tickets left. Right, so if somebody really would like to come and hear all these wonderful artists, including the Forget-Me-Nots Choir, and Ronan Collins is going to do the emceeing, so that's brilliant. And there may be some tickets left, a small number. Brian Redden said there could be a small number left. So
And they're tomorrow night at half floating 7. Over the whole proceedings will be the spirit of Brendan Grace.
Absolutely. and there'll be lots of, there's a few comedians. I think Mario Rosenstock is coming, and Twink will probably, she was a great friend of. So there are people who are probably going to have a little reminder of Brendan's jokes. I mean, he was great for the stories.
Nora, great to see you.
Thank you very much,
Ryan. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for
and
that.
Good luck tomorrow night with the choir.
Thank you very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.